Well, we've been indoctrinated, brainwashed, whatever hemisphere you're from. And the brainwashing is that we are most comfortable when someone takes away our responsibility, our authority, and our agency and tells us what to do. Mm-hmm. We ask questions like, will this be on the test? And so I'm sure plenty of people see that giant yellow pencil sitting next to you and have a horrible flashback of multiple choice tests. Will this be on the test? Well, 10 or 20 years of that sort of brainstorming means that when we hit adulthood, we ask, what's the minimum amount, right? What are the tasks ahead of me? How do I get an A? What do I check off? And we forget that we have a lot of choices. We forget that we don't have to be a cog in the system if we don't want to be. And we forget that we can take all the responsibility we want. It's up for grabs.
Do you love your life as a small business owner? Let's be real, sometimes we just don't. It's my hope that this, the My Daily Business podcast, helps you regain a little of that lost love through practical, actionable tips, tools, and tactics, interviews with creative and curious small business owners, and in-depth coaching episodes with me, your host, Fiona Kalacki. With more than 20 years experience in marketing, brand, content, and systems, and having now helped thousands of small business owners, I know what it takes to build a business that you can be proud of and that actually aligns with your values, your beliefs, and your hopes for the future. So much of our daily life is spent working on and in the businesses and the brands that we are creating. And so it makes sense to actually love what you do. So let's get into this podcast and help you figure out how to love your business and your life on the daily. Hello and welcome to episode 550 of the My Daily Business podcast. Today, you're in for a real treat with an incredible guest, one that I've asked to come on the podcast many times, and he finally said yes. Before we get stuck into that, I want to let you know that group coaching is open. Our applications are open. You can head on over to mydailybusiness.com/group coaching. That is a 12-month program with myself and a beautiful curated group of other small business owners eager to cheer you on, commiserate when things aren't going well, and really be your mirror in this business world to show you what are you doing really well, what could you improve on? And you also have one-on-one time with myself, as well as access to all of our courses, including our AI chat group. That is a monthly group where we come together as small business owners to discuss how to use AI ethically and efficiently and in a way that serves us, but also makes us feel that we're still working with values and alignment to those values. Also, if you are keen to just join the AI chat and just meet once a month, that can be found at mydailybusiness.com/AI chat. We have about 60 people from around the world who come together. We also have a WhatsApp group where we discuss what we're finding, what's working, what's not. It can be a really lonely world in small business, particularly if you work for yourself. And it's really amazing to have this group that comes together once a month, and you can watch the recordings if you're not in the right time zone to join live. And really appreciate and discuss the pros and cons of AI and how to best utilize it for our own small businesses. Again, if you want to join that, it's at mydailybusiness.com/AI chat. And if you're interested in the 12-month group coaching, you can head on over to mydailybusiness.com/group coaching and sign up there. And before we get into today's interview episode, I want to acknowledge the traditional owners and custodians of these beautiful lands on which I conduct all of these interviews and run my business, and that is the Wobbarong and Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. And I pay my respects to their elders, past and present, and acknowledge that sovereignty has never been ceded. All right, let's get into today's interview episode. It is my absolute pleasure, I can't believe I'm about to say this, to be bringing you an interview on this podcast with the one and only Seth Godin. Many of you will be super familiar with Seth Godin. Many of you, like me, will be signed up to his daily email and have read his many, 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 many books. I think he's been involved in something like 100 plus books. I know that he himself has written more than 20 best-selling titles. If you're listening and you somehow don't know who Seth Godin is,
He was really a pioneer in the kind of 1990s when a lot of us were starting to get computers at home for the first time. People were joining the internet, this new frontier, and he really helped businesses start to connect with people through that medium. He launched a whole bunch of his own ventures. He had a book packaging company, at one point a record company, and then he created Yoyodyne, and that was one of the very first online direct marketing companies. In 1998, he sold that business to Yahoo for quite a sum, and he became their vice president of direct marketing. And he really is kind of the godfather of email marketing. He coined the term and he wrote a book called Permission Marketing, which is really shifting the way that we think about how businesses connect with their audience, with people, and really, instead of interrupting them with your advertising, really seeking their permission and them really inviting you into their lives through things like giving you an email address, which so many of us just take for granted now. Over the years, as I said, he has written more than 20 best-selling books, from Permission Marketing, Purple Cow, that was a massive one that I read back in the day, Tribes, The Practice. In today's chat, we talk about This Is Strategy. He's also written This Is Marketing. He has written The Dip, which we also talk about. And just these books that really challenge us to stand out, to lead, and ultimately to do work that matters. As I said, I'm signed up to his daily blog, which I think he's got more than a million people that read that. And he really, in that, champions creativity, generosity, and the power of ideas to spread. He is a teacher, he's a thinker, and he's just someone who inspires millions of people. And he's somebody that I personally have taken so much inspiration and knowledge from over the years in my own business, and even prior to starting this business almost 10 years ago. Now, over the years, I have emailed Seth Godin from time to time, and I have to say he's always been absolutely gracious in his response. And eventually, after I asked numerous times, he said yes to coming onto this podcast. And today I'm bringing you a conversation that we had back in July. And in this, we touch on everything from how should we work with AI, and how do we even begin to embrace this new part of reality that's happening for all of us? And also, what does it mean when you're a creative and you're worried that something that you have put your life's dedication and time into feels like perhaps it's being lost, that whole industry may be lost because of AI? We also talk about humanity in business. We talk about connection and community and what that actually really means. And we talk about what it's like to be the best and how do you try and be the best at something in your own way and in your own industry. It was an absolute pleasure to talk to Seth, and I'm so excited to bring you this conversation because I listened back to it for the first time recently. I think I was a bit nervous to listen back to it because I was worried, you know, how did it all come across? And I'm so excited. Honestly, I felt really inspired listening to it, hearing from him, hearing his wisdom, and I just can't wait to share it with you. So I will. Here it is, my interview with the incredible Seth Godin. Welcome to the podcast, Seth.
Thank you for having me, Fiona. It's good to see you.
You too. And I always like to ask everyone the same question, which is, how are you feeling about life in this exact moment?
Well, I could be doing anything I wanted to right now, and I'm talking to you. So I'm doing anything I wanted to, which is magical. And too often we skip over the fact that we have agency. So I'm feeling really good. Thank you.
We're going to get into that exact topic today because it's something that I think a lot of us, like you say, do forget. Before we jump into that, a lot of people will know you. Millions of people read your books. I have lots of your books here. I know you don't fly anymore, but when you did fly and you used to have to fill in those little customs cards that say occupation, what would you write, Seth Godin?
Actually, I wrote a Fast Company column about what a crisis that card is for me. And you can probably still find it from 30 years ago because we choose to pigeonhole ourselves by a job title. And I have a thing about customs and being accused of a crime I did not commit. So I was very nervous that if I wrote author, teacher, or entrepreneur, or the person who invented email marketing, they say, but you did those other things too. So if I have to fill in a form, I'll just usually say teacher because that's my main job, helping turn on lights for other people.
And you do it very well. And one of the vehicles, I guess, that you use for that teaching is your books. And we're going to jump in straight away to This Is Strategy, your latest book, which is so good. It's a collection of almost 300 riffs, ideas. You can open it at any page. In fact, you don't have page numbers, so all the better. I wanted to bring out two riffs to start with. The first one, and I think, you know, it goes to what you just talked about, but you say, and I'm going to read, "We waste the freedom we each have. We waste it waiting for instructions, and we waste it meandering without a strategy. We each have the freedom to care, to connect, to choose, to initiate, and to do work that matters if we choose. When the person you could have been meets the person you are becoming, is it going to be a cause for celebration or heartbreak?" Whoa, very profound. And when you pick this book up and you think, oh, it's strategy, it's business, great. You know, what I like to do in my work is very much combine life and business because they intermix. Can you talk to that whole concept?
Well, we've been indoctrinated, brainwashed, whatever hemisphere you're from. And the brainwashing is that we are most comfortable when someone takes away our responsibility, our authority, and our agency and tells us what to do. Mm-hmm. We ask questions like, will this be on the test? And so I'm sure plenty of people see that giant yellow pencil sitting next to you and have a horrible flashback of multiple choice tests. Will this be on the test? Well, 10 or 20 years of that sort of brainstorming means that when we hit adulthood, we ask, what's the minimum amount, right? What are the tasks ahead of me? How do I get an A? What do I check off? And we forget that we have a lot of choices. We forget that we don't have to be a cog in the system if we don't want to be. And we forget that we can take all the responsibility we want. It's up for grabs.
Mm-hmm. On that, at the moment, I run this AI chat group with small business owners once a month. And one of the things that comes up is, yes, I have the agency. And yes, I've created maybe 30 years of being a photographer or 30 years of being a designer or 30 years of being an artist. And there's another part of your book that I'm going to read out to go with this question. But on that point of we've got the freedom, now people are feeling, some people, particularly in the creative sector, that AI is taking away some of that agency. And there's a line later in the book in Riff 287, where you say, the future is actually many futures, and our future is not impervious to our actions. In fact, our actions or inactions are a cause of our future. And our attitude about the present, the story we tell ourselves about what just happened, is totally in our control. When it comes to AI, and I know you're always on the front foot of tech, it can be both exciting and terrifying. And there's this tension in that group that I run because mm-hmm. people will come and think, oh my gosh, I've just discovered Midjourney, or I've just discovered how incredible Perplexity is. And at the same time, I'm freaking out that the industry I've become a master in is dying.
Yep, because it is.
And what do you say?
Pretending it's not happening isn't going to help anybody. Mm-hmm. That when smartphones came along, average wedding photographers freaked out. They said, how dare people bring a camera to a wedding? It ruins everything. Mm-hmm. And when the Mac started allowing people to typeset, the people who were typesetters said, mediocre typesetters said, this is terrible. When you let anyone set type, anyone else set type in, it's going to be horrible. And they were right. It was horrible. And yet, the market for mediocre typesetters disappeared. No one needs mediocre typesetting. Mm-hmm. And the same thing is true for copywriting, and the same thing is true for web design, and the same thing is true for anything you're doing as a, quote, creative, where you're treating it like a job. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I've been a creative for 40 years. On a good day, I was creative for an hour. And the rest of the day, you're doing tasks. And what has happened for me in the last 2 months is now I'm being creative 7 hours a day because I've hired all these free AIs to do tasks for me. And you're going to either work for AI or AI is going to work for you. And so if I had only 1 minute with the people on your call, I'd say to them, are you the best in the world at using Midjourney? Are you the best in the world at using ChatGPT? Are you the best in the world at whatever tool it is? Because if you're the best in the world at this, you're not going to have to worry about anything. Mm. But if you're hiding from it, why exactly would I hire you? You wouldn't hire you. Mm-hmm. And so you got the job you got because the world changed. The job you have now was impossible 30 years ago. Okay, well, it's about to go away. So what job do you want to get now?
Do you think on that, you know, so I've written two books with a publisher, you know, well below the amount you've written. Do you think at some point we will get to a stage where you can go into a bookshop or maybe browse online and there will be the AI books and the human books, or you'll go to the cinema and there'll be the human film or an AI film? I mean, obviously they'll use both, but do you think we'll get to a stage where there'll be book publishers that literally are having books that humans were not necessarily involved in outside of programming AI tools?
Well, those are two questions. The first question is, I'm having trouble imagining a store where you can walk in and they say, these are the items that were made without electricity and these are the items made with electricity. Or a record that you could buy that says, this is the album that was made with absolutely no digital intervention whatsoever. And these are all the other. There are zero albums made today that have no. I mean, I used to have a record label. There are none that don't have a computer chip involved. So there's already AI in movies and there's already AI in books. And it's just going to blend. What's actually going to happen is the bookstore is going to further disappear. And the kind of books that people are going to go buy are not the kind of books I used to make or the kind of books that maybe you have in mind. A book that's going to give somebody a how-to, a step-by-step, a directory, a bunch of data is out of date as soon as you finish it. And then it takes 9 months for it to come out. That we don't have an information shortage anymore. So if someone's going to go to the trouble of getting a book, they want a human voice, a point of view, something that isn't verifiable and provable, but something that's the opposite of that, something that provokes and inspires. So that's going to be around for a long time. But it's a mistake to think that AI is some sort of contagion that wrecks a project if it's involved, because the person who initiates and runs that project is not allowed to say, oh, it's lousy because I used AI, because the person still invested time and money. You can't say it's lousy because. You have to say, I made this. And what helped you is sort of irrelevant.
And I think as long as we keep using AI as an assistant, not the authority, we can utilize it to its best ability, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but assistant is a tricky word. Like, if you need to know what the weather is going to be, do you need it to come from humans all the way down? Right? At some point, a person relied on an AI that they trusted enough to say, it's going to be 4 degrees Celsius tomorrow. They don't know that it's going to be 4 degrees Celsius, but they've learned to trust this system that told it that. Well, we have a long history of all of that. Your bank balance isn't pointing to a pile of paper. It's pointing to some ones and zeros in a computer, but you've come to trust it with your life saving. So the same thing's going to happen here. I don't think people should take life advice or health advice or business advice unvarnished at $19 a month AI. But I think in 5 years, you might want to listen to that more than a doctor.
Yeah, already there. I was looking at something to do with Google and a pediatric hospital in the Netherlands and the amount of data they can get through, so that if you bring your child in with cancer now, it can go through basically a history of every child that has ever presented. The human brain just cannot comprehend that much data that quickly. So 100%, that's what I think this tension is. There's so much incredible stuff coming at us, the same way the internet changed the world.
Right.
And then there's also going to be the negative part of that, as there is, because humans have that negative part to themselves as well. On life, talking about humans and being, you know, alive, you have had this massive career for so long. And in that, though you don't really talk about it too much, you have a family, you have a wife, you have life, you've got friendships, you've got all of this stuff that has happened. And I imagine in that, and for anyone in any period of life, there's going to be hardships and there's going to be times when life is not particularly great. You have a very much consistent way of showing up. How do people keep showing up, keep serving the communities that they have when life isn't going to plan. And I'm wondering, have you ever, Seth Godin, who writes a daily vlog, pulled yourself away and just retracted from life?
One of the giant scams of the internet is pushing people to think they need to be vulnerable and authentic at work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's way overrated.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you don't want a surgeon or a lawyer or a traffic cop or an Uber driver to be vulnerable and authentic. You want them to be professional.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we should reserve vulnerable and authentic for our friend mm-hmm. and for people who we care about.
Mm-hmm.
But when we show up as a professional, mm-hmm. what does it mean? It means we are making a promise.
Mm-hmm.
And so Patagonia is not allowed to have a bad day. Apple's not allowed to have a bad day. Microsoft's not allowed to have a bad day because they are a company.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would expect the same thing from the person I hired on Upwork to retouch some photos. If you need a friend, go get a friend. But if you're going to extend yourself and say, I will exchange my skill and passion for your time and money, that's a promise.
Mm.
And so, yeah, I've written 10,000 blog posts in a row, but I don't write them anymore at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Mm.
Because once I cared about my streak, I said, I don't want my streak to end because I had the flu mm-hmm. or because there was a speed bump in my life. Because
mm-hmm.
as a professional,
mm-hmm.
I could invest the energy to make sure that my readers don't have to worry about that.
Mm-hmm.
And when I bring this up, people who have come up on the creative side of the internet don't always like to hear this. They would like to be rewarded for being their authentic, personal, human, vulnerable self.
Mm-hmm.
And my problem with that is that once you start down that path, your promises get muddy. The pressure on you goes up. You're asking for a different sort of relationship with unknown strangers in the outside world who you're hoping to transact with. And you're cashing in on your personal life, your family life for attention. And I think you can do better than that.
It is an interesting take. And I can see how people could take it in a sort of a different way. On that level of consistency, then another question I wanted to ask in there is you talk about being the best and becoming the best in your space and for your particular people. And I'm wondering if you can talk to that level of consistency. So say, for example, this podcast, I started it. I am very consistent with this podcast, no matter what is going on in the background, anything. You know, this is at, we're, I don't know, 550 episodes. Is being the best, and I've got to figure out how to word this, is being the best an attitude of consistency? Because if you show up 500 plus, you've got 500 podcasts, people found your podcast and then they binge and it goes up in the ranking and blah, blah, blah. But can you be the best without being consistent? Does that make sense as a question?
Yeah, it makes total sense. So let's talk about what best means.
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean to be the best provider of 3/4 inch stainless steel number 5 rust-free boat screws,
mm-hmm.
right? We have a very clear understanding of what the screw needs to do to be good at being the screw.
Mm-hmm.
If you're the provider of the screw, we have a different understanding about what it means to have a warranty and to have availability and to have in stock and things like that. Okay. So we're pretty straightforward about commodities.
Mm.
What does it mean to be the best podcaster?
And I'm not that's saying different. I'm the best podcaster. I mean for a particular group of people, maybe.
That's what I'm getting to.
Mm-hmm.
You are the world's best Fiona Kalacki podcaster. If people want what you have, there are no substitutes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The way, as every time you try to be Scott Galloway, or every time you try to be Tim Ferriss, you're going to be mediocre.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't be better at being them than they are.
Mm. And you don't want to try because it's not yours.
Well, but no, you could try if you could pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so there are, you know, brands that have figured out how to be the Heinz ketchup of salsa.
Mm.
And you can rhyme with somebody by matching and exceeding their promise. But podcasters succeed by being idiosyncratic. And idiosyncratic still requires a certain kind of consistency, which is the consistency of rhyming with yourself. Mm-hmm. Now, it is possible to be completely erratic and that be what you're consistent at.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But, you know, Pee Wee Herman, rest in peace. Pee Wee Herman was always Pee Wee Herman, whatever he was doing. And so there's different kinds of consistency. Pee Wee Herman could take 5 years off and come back and make a movie as Pee Wee Herman, and he would do great because the consistency you wanted from Pee Wee Herman wasn't he's on every week.
Mm-hmm.
It was he's Pee Wee Herman, damn it.
Mm.
And so when I say the best, many of the people I know who are seeking to be, quote, creative, are actually trying to find a job without a boss. And their definition of best is, you need blank, I have blank. I'm flexible, I'm fast, and I'm cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do better than that. Because mm-hmm. you can say, if you need those things, I'll send you to someone cheaper than me.
Mm-hmm.
But if you need somebody specific who does a thing that others are afraid to do and who leans into that thing, that's me. And so if you go to a heart surgeon and say, I have a hangnail, she won't say, oh, I'll take care of it for you.
Mm.
She sends you down the street to someone who does hangnails because she's a professional.
Mm-hmm. And knows exactly what she's doing and what she's trying to aim at. On that, when you just talked about the kind of fear of owning it, another great book is The Practice, Shipping Creative Work by Seth Godin. And there's a section in here that I was going to ask you to talk to as well, which is when 97, you say 97 are intent matters. What change do you seek to make? Why bother to speak up or take an action if you're not seeking to change someone or something? It makes some people deeply uncomfortable to imagine their work will change someone else. What right, do we wonder, do we have to take that on? What authority do we have to show up with any intent at all? That is a big one. And I work with creative people all the time that, you know, love their work, love what they do, find it hard to step into that authority space or step into having a particular opinion or, yeah, can yep. you talk to that for someone who's listening who's like, ah, that is me, exactly.
Well, it's almost everybody. So let's say you're a chef. I know a bunch of chefs. Most of them would like to get paid slightly more than fairly to change people in a very simple way, from people who want to have dinner to people who have had dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And they're acknowledging there's lots and lots of restaurants out there. Please pick me. And they will push and argue for their particular vision of the restaurant, but mostly they're looking for a job without a boss. They're willing to work harder than anybody else. They're willing to sacrifice a lot, but they're not articulating a point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas my friend Danny Meyer, my friend Will Gadara, people who are known in the restaurant business, they have a point of view. They are happy to say, oh, this restaurant, it's not for you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for stopping by. Thanks for asking. But no, that's not what we do here. They're happy to say, you will be transformed by something we do here tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's not what you want, that's fine. We only have 60 tables. We got someone else to come. And we can be very clear about the change we seek to make. So, you know, in Will's book, he tells the story. He ran 11 Madison Park, which at the time was the most famous restaurant in the world. And one of his waiters heard an older couple talking about the fact that it was their 50th wedding anniversary that night. And they were reminiscing about their first date in New York City, where he had bought her a hot dog from a hot dog stand outside. And the waiter, on his own volition, because of the creation of the community that Will had built, got someone to cover the table, ran outside, ran 10 blocks away, bought a hot dog from a hot dog cart, brought it back, put it on fine china, and served it as the next course.
Wow. Wow.
Doesn't that choke you up?
It does. I've got tears. I literally have tears. Because it's the human element coming in and that freedom to express that in that space and not be told, no, that's not on the menu. That's not how we do it. The system is broken. Yeah. How beautiful. Okay, which leads to another question I had for you, which is, you don't fly anymore. And do you want to just tell people in case they are not aware of why or?
Well, I don't try to make a big deal of it, but I gave 1,000 speeches over the course of many years. And I would go someplace, spend an hour and fly home. And then I worked on the Carbon Almanac and saw just how desperate our problem is. And I also, after I turned 60, was getting sick a lot. And between the two of them, I thought, what would happen if I could teach the world that if you want Seth Godin to come, you can hire him to come on Zoom? Because if I could slowly change the way conferences are run, and it's already happened, some conferences are now fully virtual, which means I just kept 1,000 people off an airplane. Mm. So I'll still fly if it's a family sort of thing, but I don't fly for work.
Okay. So with that, you know, the element, and obviously there's a few elements to it, but one of them is the environment and the kind of values alignment with that and choosing not to do things. And I'm sure whilst a lot of things are going virtual, there may have been some jobs that maybe you lost out on because, you know, you can't travel, although
I lose one every week. Okay. It's been a very expensive choice and I don't regret it.
Okay. So if someone's listening to this, and just like the restaurant that you said, where the restaurant knows exactly who they are and they're happy to turn away if you're not right for us, if someone's listening to this right now and they're thinking, well, that's very nice. It's very nice to have values alignment. And it's something I talk about a lot as well. But it's all very nice for you guys because you have this or that. I'm not in that position yet to turn down that money. What do you say and how do they begin if they haven't already?
Yeah, it's so easy to justify racing to the bottom. Mm-hmm. It's so easy. When I started out as a book packager, I was broke and broke and broke. I got 800 rejection letters in a row. I was window shopping at restaurants. It was a very hard slog for years and years. And the jobs I turned down are the most important jobs I ever made a decision about. I got a gig just to stay in business, writing a spreadsheet for a takeover of 4 nursing homes. And while I'm doing it, I was like, I could do this again. I know how to get this work. And then I'm going to be someone who spends his life doing spreadsheets for nursing homes. And if you want to lower your price, it's easier to get somebody, a client, who cares about price. Mm. But if you want to raise your price, you have to become the kind of freelancer that people pay extra to. And you don't do that by being good at dealing with bad clients. That doesn't get you good clients. Mm-hmm. That just gets you more bad clients. And so there's a paradox here, which is you've got to figure out how to invest the time where you're not on the clock to build a community and a body of work that attracts great clients. And the easiest time to do that is during times of change. We have one right now. And so if you're not getting paid 60 hours a week, and I think it's very unlikely you are, how are you going to find 20 hours a week to become the best in the world at a craft, at a skill, at something where you can say you'll pay a lot, but you get more than you pay for? Because if you're not able to say you'll pay a lot, but you'll get more than you pay for, then you're racing to the bottom and hoping for the goodwill of people who are going to pay you more than they have to.
In that answer, you mentioned community and you have built a massive community. You know, you have more than 1 million readers of your daily blog. I am one of those million. And I wanted to ask you about, and I know you just mentioned before when you said, you know, I'm not getting up at 4 a.m. to write this stuff. But in that 20 hours when you're building this community or when you're building these connections, when you're building yourself to better your craft, how do you start having boundaries? This is something a lot of my clients have where they've built these communities and they've built them on a platform that has DMs or comments, or I've got a YouTube and I kind of need to get back to them because this is the community that built me. And yet they're like, it's 7 o'clock. I want to be with my kids. And here I am sending DMs to people. How do you, because you're very generous, Seth. I have emailed you over the years. We don't know each other very well. And you have always been incredibly gracious with responding. How do you do it? Is that AI now? Or how do people set their boundaries whilst also building this community?
Okay, so the first thing I want to say is your questions have been great. The second thing I want to say is, if I ever make anything with AI, I will tell people. Mm-hmm. Every word of my blog, every book I've ever written, by me, every single word. I have 3 new projects coming out this summer, 4, and I've been very clear from the first word of them that AI is my partner, and that's a different thing. But if I wrote you an email, I wrote it. So the third thing is this. We got to be very careful about our words. My blog readers are not a community.
Okay.
They have offered me permission to whisper to them. I don't have to yell. I don't have to chase them.
Mm-hmm.
That is permission marketing. I wrote that book. A community is peer-to-peer.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are busy taking time away from your kids to send DMs to make sure you have a lot of traffic on X or Facebook, you're working for free for Mark Zuckerberg. I'm not saying you should do that. I think that's a waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm talking about building a community, what I'm saying is this. If I write a blog post that enables my readers to talk to their peers in a way that they're happy to, I gave them fuel
mm-hmm.
to amplify their community.
Mm-hmm.
If I build the Alt MBA, and now there's 6,000 alumni around the world in 90 countries, and they know each other, I don't have to show up anymore because
mm-hmm.
they're a community. So we have to take our ego out of it and say, what we do when we build a community is we invite our competitors, we invite our colleagues, we invite our clients, and we introduce them to each other, and we create the conditions for them to succeed with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because as long as you're doing that, you're going to be in the room where it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in the room where it happens, you're going to get plenty of gigs.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But if you're busy trying to work for free, DMing faster than anybody else, building up this tiny soft tissue of how many TikTok views you have, you're hiding.
Mm-hmm.
You're hiding because you're using brain dead effort to have pretend followers. They're not your friends and they're not your followers. Most of these people would not miss you if you disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be a meaningful specific, as Zig would say. Somebody who, you know, if Chip Kidd stopped designing book covers, we would miss him. If the Grateful Dead stopped touring, we would miss them.
Mm-hmm.
That's meaningful and specific.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing stopping you from being those people.
I love this. And another thing I loved that you did very differently to so many launches that I've seen is with your book launch, actually, for This Is Strategy, you had people all over the world, and I was in the little Melbourne group, and I went there, had no idea what to expect. And I went there and met a whole bunch of people. We now have a WhatsApp. I'm going to message them this morning and be like, oh my God, look who I spoke to. But you created these little pockets all over the world. Can you just talk to that if somebody's listening who has maybe a launch or something else coming up and they're like, maybe I want to do things differently?
Okay, so grand openings are overrated. They're not grand. What you want, and also Kickstarter is not about starting, it's about finish. What you want is to begin with the smallest viable audience. You want to begin with 7 or 10 or 30 people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can connect 30 people around an idea, then they will bring the other. And if you can't, you need a better idea. But the mistake is to leap into, I need 30,000. Because that's about you.
Mm-hmm.
That's not about the community.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're talking about here is a long slog, step by step, not hoping to win the internet. My blog has never once had the most popular blog post of the day. Right? We know what those posts are like,
mm-hmm.
right? The ones that go viral that everyone's talking about. It's never happened to me. I'm glad it's never happened to me. Because if it had happened, it would have wrecked everything because I would have chased that.
Mm.
And instead, it's brick by brick, chip by chip, day by day. Am I doing something that will connect somebody else to an idea?
Mm.
And there's such a shortage of connection. So my friend, Tina Roth Eisenberg, has, 140,000 best friends around the world now. Because Creative Mornings, this act of audacious love and generosity, is simply a system that connects designers to each other.
Mm-hmm.
140,000 people in 50 countries. Do you think Tina is ever going to run out of things to say and do and make a living? Of course not. Because she created this opportunity for other people to do a thing they've always wanted to do, which is connect.
Yeah. It's so interesting that you brought that up. I actually spoke at Creative Mornings Melbourne one year and have had numerous clients over the years who said, I saw you 6 years ago. Do you remember? And now I'm doing coaching with you. So, wow, full circle. When you talk about, okay, brick by brick, step by step, you have another amazing book, which I don't have the physical copy because I've listened to it numerous times, called The Dip. And The Dip talks, it's a short book. If anyone's out there who's like, I'm not a reader, go just get it. It's short. You'll get through it in no time. There are two concepts, or there's a few concepts, but there's a concept then of the dip, and there's a concept of the cul-de-sac. And if you are in that stage of brick by brick, I'm just not getting anywhere. How do you know that you are in a dip versus I'm in a cul-de-sac, this is time to leave?
Okay, so let's give people the quick overview. Anything that creates value over time is based on some sort of scarcity. And doctor visits are expensive because not everyone's a doctor. If everyone was a doctor, it would be easy to find a doctor. Why is it hard to be a doctor? Because there's a limited number of medical schools. And so they invented organic chemistry as a course to break people's spirit, because if you can't get through that, we don't want you. Mm-hmm. That's a dip. So don't sign up to be a pre-med student if you're not prepared to take organic chemistry. Don't be surprised 4 years later when they say, okay, now you have to take organic chemistry and half the people are going to fail. That's the deal. Mm-hmm. And so a dip is a good thing because you know it's coming, and you know if you get to the other side, you'll be okay. So the key thing to understand, you will probably not be the first person in history to get through a dip. Mm-hmm. You should find a dip that others have gotten through, like organic chemistry. Mm-hmm. So if you say, I'm going to devote the next 15 years of my life to figuring out how to program a flute that I can play with my toes using artificial intelligence, maybe you will. And I don't want to root against you, but it would probably be better to invest decades of your life in something where you can see a pattern, mm-hmm. where you have clues about what it's like. So let's say the dip you have in mind is you want to be a professional speaker. Mm-hmm. Well, there are two ways to be a professional speaker. They're not what people think. It's not that you're good at speaking, because plenty of free speakers are good at speaking. The two things are either you're famous for something else or you're famous for your TED Talk. That's pretty much the only two choices. Mm-hmm. So you can go be famous by becoming Secretary of State. Let's leave that aside. What about your TED Talk? How's that going to work? Well, it used to be you just had to sit there waiting for Richard Saul Wurman to call you out of the blue. Mm-hmm. That's not a dip. That's just a lottery ticket. Mm-hmm. But now there's 500, 1,000 TEDxes everywhere. So go do a TEDx in 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. How'd it go? Did anyone share the video? If no one shared the video, make a better one. Mm-hmm. Because you know who got through that dip? Brené Brown got through that dip. Simon Sinek got through that dip. Neither of them got picked by TED. They hit home runs through TEDx. So now you understand the bricks. Mm-hmm. I'm going to keep doing TEDx's until either no one will let me do another one, or I get good enough at it that the community shares it. Mm-hmm. That's what a dip looks like. Mm-hmm. Whereas a cul-de-sac is smoking and smoking and smoking, hoping that you'll win a Boston Marathon. It doesn't work that way.
Mm. Do you think it can be very difficult to know, like when you're in a cul-de-sac? I mean, when you say smoking, you know, not getting a Boston one, but what if it's been, you know, like it's just, you're on that precipice. How do you know? How do you know I'm in the cul-de-sac? Like in a practical way.
Okay. Your question was not, are you in a cul-de-sac? It's what's a cul-de-sac? Cul-de-sac is universal. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with you. It's not personal. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the most concrete thing people can do after listening to this is invite 5 colleagues/competitors to join a circle. Call it a mastermind if you want. Check in on Zoom every week for 30 minutes and come up with really clear ground rules about no personal criticism, no false reassurance. Mm-hmm. Just say out loud what you see. Say out loud what you think the dip is. Say out loud what you just did in your work and what feedback you got. And listen to what other people have to say. Mm-hmm. Because if anyone who's going out to a party looks in the mirror. If you don't have a mirror, you have no idea if your makeup's all askew. These people are your mirror. Mm-hmm. And you want to find a group that wants you to succeed. that isn't there to spare your feeling and that is going to encourage you without reassuring you. And the fact is that half of us are below average. That's the definition of average. Mm. And it's not personal. It's just, what do you see and how did you choose to use your resources? Mm-hmm. And don't play games you can't win. Don't engage in systems that are stacked against you. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of games you can win. Go play some of those. Mm-hmm. And once you figure that out, you can play bigger games. Mm-hmm. But don't hope to win the lottery, because that's a bad idea.
Mm. It also goes to a point, another amazing point in here, which I haven't actually post-it noted, but about clowns. You know, how long are you going to wait and that the clown didn't come to your party? Can you talk to that point as well? Because I think it has a link to what you've just said.
Well, so if we think about Adlerian philosophy and psychology, there are two ways to look at the world. One way to look at the world is in a Freudian trauma method, which is something happened to you and it's affecting everything that goes on after this. And that's the reason. And it could be the way you were born, where you were born, how you were privileged or unprivileged, something didn't go right. That story, our origin story, is either fuel or it's a weight. Mm-hmm. And in the case of Spider-Man, it was fuel. Because every time he felt like hiding out, he remembered his Uncle Ben telling him about power and responsibility. But if it's holding you back, it's a great excuse. But Adler would point out, okay, you were supposed to have a clown come to your birthday party when you were four, and the clown didn't show up. Now what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. Right? You were born outside of the big cultural currents. Now what are you going to do? And that is completely up to us. And I say this knowing how much privilege I have, knowing how many advantages I have from the year I was born to where I was born to who my parents were to the lucky breaks. And there are so many lucky breaks. I am well aware of that. But I also know that on this journey, there were plenty of people standing right next to me and they've made different choices. Some of their choices have made them way more successful than me and some of their choices have not. And it's the choices that decide what's going to happen next, because we can't do anything about yesterday.
Mm. Which is a full circle right to the very start of when we started talking about agency and freedom. I know I don't have you for too much longer. So we have in this podcast for all 500 plus episodes, we have a quick fire round. So whatever comes to mind, are you ready, Seth Godin?
Let's try our best.
Okay. What is your non-negotiable self-care practice or your non-negotiable timeout?
I am really clear about what I eat and what I don't eat.
Okay. I like this. Okay. Long-term health, I'm assuming. What is something new or interesting? I imagine new might be a thing, but interesting that you have learned in the last month?
I keep learning so many things about how AI is smart and how it's dumb, and about how it can be used as a tool for good or for ill, both in our career and in general.
Are you an early bird or a night owl if you have to get something done?
Why would you postpone something that you need to do? 5 o'clock in the morning, let's go.
Okay, love this. What does success mean to Seth Godin outside of any financial reward?
Those aren't related, financial reward and success. Success is doing work I'm proud of that other people are glad I offered to them.
What is your favorite thing in your home that is not a person or a plant or something that's living?
The stereo speakers I built that are hooked up to the 2A3 low wattage tube amps that were hand built by a guy in Brooklyn.
Love that answer. What is your favorite way to celebrate when something has gone really well for you?
Start working on the next project.
And finally, what is a piece of advice? And you give out so much great advice, but what's one piece of advice that has stayed with you for years that somebody else gave you?
That someone else gave me. Because the one I was going to say is the shortest blog post I've ever written. You don't need more time. You just need to decide. And I would say, if I had to pick one in a speed round, it would be from Roz Zander, which is don't take yourself so damn serious.
What a great way to end. My final question is, what are you most proud of from your journey? And it's been a long journey in business so far.
When I hear that someone I taught someone else and it led to a good outcome, I'm glad I did that work.
Amazing. It has been such an honor and joy to interview you, Seth Godin. Where is the best place that people can connect? And have you got anything that you want to talk about that's coming up?
If you go to seth.blog, you can just type Seth, you'll find it. 10,000 blog posts for free. And at sethgodin.com, you can find this, that, the other thing.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And that was
thank you, Fiona.
So great. I deeply appreciate everything that you've put out into the world.
Thank you so much. We'll see you.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
There is so much in today's conversation that I am going to take home with me and really think about in a lot more detail, and also talk about with quite a number of my clients and my friends who also manage to run small businesses and struggle with a lot of the stuff that I have talked about today. I am, of course, going to highlight two things that stood out to me, as I always do on this podcast with interviews. And there were so many things. Honestly, it was really, really difficult to narrow it down to just two. But the first thing that really stood out was this idea of agency. It is something I talk about with clients quite a bit, that, you know, just because you've had this business for X amount of years doesn't mean you can't pivot or change direction or do something else. Or just because, you know, this or that hasn't been working doesn't mean you can't try something new. Or just because, you know, somebody told you you have to do your marketing this way doesn't mean you have to do your marketing this way. You know, you have agency. You can take a day off. You can shut things early. You can try and find a different way of working that, you know, doesn't impact your health in such a negative way or your mental health in such a negative way. And I think so often we can almost become these bosses that we would never work for in real life. And suddenly we've created this business that has all these invisible rules and regulations, and we forget we have the agency to change things. The idea of even being in business and having that as an option is such a privilege and a freedom that a lot of people do not get. And yet sometimes we're in that and we forget just how much power we actually have over the way that we run our business, the way we talk about our business, the way we connect with others through our business. So I love that Seth talked about that. The other thing, obviously, that we talked about at length and something that I'm very interested in, and we run the monthly AI chat group, is AI and is how it's working and how it is coming into effect. And it was a really interesting point when Seth talked about the fact that, you know, you can look at records or you can look at books and not ask things like, were they made with electricity? You know, were they made with help from the internet? And that we will get to a point where it is just normal to think about, were they made with AI? And it's here. And that's what I'm always saying to clients. It is here. It is not a question of if or, you know, it's now. It's happened. It's been happening for ages. And it's like, how do we figure out how to make the best utilization of AI for what we can do? And I love that Seth talked about the fact that even though he's been a creative for 4+ decades, when he was a, you know, quote unquote uncreative, he was only spending maybe an hour actually being creative because there was so much admin and everything else that had to be done. And now you can take a lot of that and utilize AI tools to do it for you, which allows you to have more time to focus on the stuff that you actually really enjoy and the stuff that is more human and nuanced and creative in your business. I love that so much. It's definitely a topic that comes up a lot in our AI monthly chat. If you want to join that, you can go to mydailybusiness.com/AI chat. And again, if you're interested in group coaching, working with me for 12 months on all sorts of things, from your marketing to your business strategy to how to get yourself out there, all sorts of things, you can head on over to mydailybusiness.com/group coaching. Again, I just want to say a massive thank you to Seth, not only for saying yes to come onto the podcast, but for all of the wisdom and guidance he's provided to me and so many small business owners around the world. If you have been inspired by what you heard today, and I'm sure you have, and you are not already signed up to Seth's blog, you can go to seths.blog and just Google Seth Godin. You'll find everything out there in the world. There's just incredible interviews. There are so many books and just so many resources that he so generously gives. And as he said, he has been working on a few new projects with AI, and I'm lucky enough to get one of these beta projects, and I'm really excited to be getting into it. There are so many things out there that can help you with your business from Seth Godin. So again, you can go to seths.blog and find out all the different things that he's got available. Thank you again so much for listening to this. If you found this useful, please share it with a friend. And if you really got something from today's podcast, I would be so honored if you could leave a review on Spotify or Apple or wherever you listen to this podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next time. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the My Daily Business podcast. For a range of tools to help you grow and start your business, including coaching programs, courses, and templates, check out our shop at mydailybusiness.com/shop. And if you want to get in touch, you can do that via email, hello@mydailybusiness.com, or you can hit us up on Instagram @mydailybusiness_. You can find us on TikTok @mydailybusiness, or find me, Fiona Kalacki, on LinkedIn. I look forward to connecting.